We have not been spending that much time on anybody in particular, except that we're really spending time not at him, but on his letter. We finished our discussion of Rav Shmira himself the first time that we talked about him, but the letter is so fascinating for what it tells us about the history of Torah. Right? Remember how his letter came to be? It's been a couple of weeks, thanks to Purim last week, since we discussed it. The Jews of Kairouan in North Africa write a letter to him wanting to know, hey, what exactly is this Mishnah and Gemara thing that we have? Where do they come from? Why does it look the way it looks? Why don't we have names for all of the Chachamim who are passing down this spoken Torah until you get to the last couple of generations? Why are we poskening like the last generations? Why isn't there Rabbi so-and-so of, 500 years before Rabbi Akiva who gets quoted and who wins these machlokes and these debates that come up? Why do we have a Mishnah and then we have Brisos and then we have Tosefta? What's the difference? So after we went through a little bit about the history of Rav Shmira Gaon himself and the significance of his work, we started learning a little bit from his letter. And what he said was that the reason why you don't have the names of the Tanoim from previous generations until you really get to the end, other than the Nasi and the Abbeis Din of the generations, but other than that, you don't really have that information, is because you didn't have debates. It was a solid Masori, it had a solid tradition. If anybody had a question, they just asked, well, what do we do? And the answer was given to them by the previous generation. And he envisions a world in which the Jews are living relatively calmly in an environment in which they're relatively safe, and therefore the tradition is passed down generation to generation, and you don't have any interruption that's going to cause people to not know what the answer is to a question. If I don't know, if I'm learning in Beis Medrash and I don't know, what do we do about X or how do we know Y, I ask the Rebbe, and the Rebbe gives me an answer, and that's that. But you encounter Roman persecution, and at that point, between that and an exile, the problems kick in. And the result is flawed Misora. You have a flawed tradition, and you have debate. And at that point, there is a need to start consolidating and figuring everything out. And Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi is the one to do it. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi has four attributes, as explained by Rav Shmira Gaon. Number one, he has great personal ability, just in terms of his wisdom. And he has the authority, he has community support. And he has the benefit of relative tranquility in his day because he has a close relationship with Antoninus Sever. We're going to talk about who Antoninus was in a moment. And he has the motivation. He has the drive to actually do this. And so he is the one who records the Mishnah. We're going to find out today that there were others who were recording some Mishnayos around then from other yeshivos. His is the yeshiva of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva teaches Rabbi Meir, who teaches Rebbe. There were others, we know from just, when you learn Gemara, the yeshiva of Rabbi Ishmael is the famous rival to the yeshiva of Rabbi Akiva. But those don't make it into Rebbe's Mishnah. Just a note on the identity of Antoninus. I went back to my notes from a shiur that I once gave on this. So Heinrich Gratz says that Antoninus is Marcus Aurelius Antoninus, also known as Caracalla, who ruled the Roman Empire from the year 198 to 217 Common Era, which fits squarely within the years of Rebbe's activity. We're taught that Rebbe canonizes the Mishnah in the year 220. He murdered his own brother. There was a whole co-emperor situation, and he ended that by executing his co-emperor. And he's not the only one in history to invent this idea. And he became the sole holder of the throne, and he went to war against thousands of his brother's supporters. He was considered then, and he remains today, one of the worst tyrants to rule the Roman Empire, but he may have been a friend of ours. We have a history like that in recent political history and past political history of taking our allies wherever we can get them. If there's a Roman emperor who's going to be good to us, sign me up. That's basically what it's what it's been like. Last Shabbos, not yesterday, but the Shabbos before, Bernie Firestone had his brother-in-law here in Shul, Dov Zakheim. And I know of Dov Zakheim from his book on Nehemiah, which disagreed with when I taught Nehemiah. It'll come up in the daily audio shiur, and when we get to Nehemiah, I'll be talking about some of his ideas and my perspective on it. But But I was talking about it. He mentioned he wrote another book about Rebbe, which I was not aware of. And he has his own theory about who Antoninus was. He has it as a blend of Caracalla and someone else. I remember that the last name is Severus, but I don't remember the full name. But he had this he has this idea that is actually the accounts that we have of Antoninus and Rebbe involve two Roman emperors, not one, being blended together. In any case, that's what enables and drives Rebbe to canonize the Mishnah. So what we started on at the end last time is the question of, what about this other material from the Tanoim? You don't just have Mishnah. You also have brisos. Brisos, literally, the word brisa means that which is outside. Bra is outside in Aramaic. I think that's the food. Yes, it is. Okay. So I'll just pause the recording here. Okay. So our question was, you have Mishnayos, but then you have other sources from the Tanaim that make it into the Gemara that are called brisos. And we said brisa means that which is outside. It's not canonized. And then you also have Tosefta, which is canonized. It's credited to Ruchia and Rav Oshia, sources that are from the time of the Mishnah, but for whatever reason, which we have to discuss, are not in the Mishnah. They're in Tosefta. Tosefta literally sounds like it means addition, that which is added onto the Mishnah. So the last time we saw that Rosh Yair Gaon writes that what was added in the Tosefta came from great Tanoim. As opposed to these other brisos, which did not come from the great Tanoim. So in other words, you've got a hierarchy. Rebbe is putting in the Mishnah what he has from the Yeshiva of Rebbe Akiva. Tosefta is also from great Tanoim, it's just not Mishnah, and we're going to come back to that in a minute. And then brisos, lesser lights. That's the idea. Then we talked about...
So where does Apocrypha?
Apocrypha is right, so Apocrypha is completely different. Apocrypha is not legal text. Apocrypha are stories, which are, in their own books, which do not make it into Tanakh. There are two schools of thought as to why the books of the Apocrypha don't make it into Tanakh. One school of thought is because they have things that run counter to halacha. The other school of thought is they're just too late for the canonization itself. But that's a discussion involving, let's say, Sefer HaShmonaim, right?
Oh, sure.
But there's a lot to be said about the Apocrypha, but not where we are right now.
Good.
So he had a whole discussion about why Rabbi Meir was the one that whose student Rebbe is canonizing the Mishnah. That we did last time, but I wanted to get to now this business of the Tosefta and what the Tosefta was. So we said at the end last time that as far as Rav Shvira Gaon is concerned, the Tosefta is not actually contemporary to the Mishnah, it's commentary to the Mishnah. The Mishnah presents halachos, and the Tosefta explains those halachos. Rav Shvira Gaon is not the only one to say that. A little bit after the time of Rav Shvira Gaon, centuries, you find the Rambam take this position as well. If you take a look at source number one, in his introduction to Perish HaMishnayos, to his commentary to the Mishnah, the Rambam writes, V'ra'a shalola hazkir mishmos ha-mekablam ela hayoser krovim elav. He, Rebbe, saw fit not to include the names, not to mention the names of those who received the tradition, only those in the generations closest to him. Mishimon Hatzadik Vahala, from Shimon Hatzadik and onward, right? In Pirkei Avos, Shimon Hatzadik is the first one named in that history. Yeah, that's quite a while before him, it's true. It's only the Anusti and the Abbeis did for generations until you get to him. It's not like you're finding out who Yehuda ben Tabai's colleagues are. The Va'asa Dvarav Bak Kolomar B'Mishnah Dvarim Kitzarim Hakolulim and Yanim Rabim, and Rebbe wrote very concisely, expressing things that are great and that there's a lot to say about in very short, brief presentations. Va'isa Brura Etzlo Meirov Chedvas Sichlo V'Rochav Binaso. It was all really clear to Rebbe from the Mishnah because he was really smart. The phrase chedvas sichlo and rochav binaso is a great phrase. In the English, I translate it as joyous intellect and broad understanding. This goes back to an idea which you find in the Rambam, but it's not the Rambam's idea. It's a general concept that your ability to know and understand is tied to your mood. That people who are very tense, people who are very agitated, people who get angry easily, don't understand things as well, don't learn as well. When you're calm, that's when you absorb information well. That's when you learn well. So that's what he's talking about here, about chedva sichlo, the joy of his mind, because the Rambam, as he reads it anyway, very laid back, very at ease, which is not the impression I get when you read the Rambam. Nonetheless, that's what he says. He says, you have to be calm, then you'll learn well. And Rebbe apparently had that trait. Avomisha lamata mimenu, hinehi kasha olav. The problem was that the people who were not on his level, it was hard for them to learn the Mishnah and just know everything from that. Because the earlier sages, they were only composing what they composed for themselves. And on their level, these few notes sufficed in order to know everything. So one of Rebbe's students, Vehu Rabbi Chia, L'chaber sefer l'alachas bo b'ikvos rabo. His student Rabbi Chia said, I am going to compose a book, walking in his Rebbe's footsteps, L'vayer bo ma she'eno borur b'divrei harav, to clarify what wasn't clear in the Mishnah. V'hi ha-tosefta, and that's the Tosefta. V'niskavim bo l'vayer ha-Mishnah, l'hosif inyanim she'omnam efsher l'lomda min ha-Mishnah, aval acharei yegi'ah. And what he did was to clarify what's in the Mishnah and to add things that you could have deduced from the Mishnah, but it would have taken a lot of work. I'm going to give you some examples. So he introduced it now so that we could learn, this is how you analyze a Mishnah. Rabbi Oshia. Rabbi Oshia also did that. V'gam Rav Chiber Breisa, and Rav also did it. V'hi Sifra V'Sifri, that's the Sifri, V'Rabim Zulasam, and many others, Mishnah is explained by Breisa, he says. Yeah, by Tosefta.
This piece assumes that everything is agreement to those other books of the Mishnah, no? That there would be no Machlokes.
That you won't find a Tosefta that runs counter to a Mishnah. So we find it with Breisos. The question is, do you find it with Tosefta? And the answer would be that if you think you found a Tosefta that seems to contradict a Mishnah, either you didn't understand one of them correctly, and then we need to resolve, we need to harmonize the two texts, and we find that in the Gemara. We need to just figure out, this is talking about this case, this is talking about that case. Or to say, Shabeshtahi, there's some kind of problem in the transmission, and that's why it was transmitted incorrectly, and that's why you're seeing a contradiction. I just want to give a couple of illustrations for this. There's an article on the Yeshivat HaRetzion website by Rabbi Yosef Marcus, where he talks about the transmission of Mishnah Tosefta Brisa. He quotes a lot of conservative theory, conservative large C, Zechariah Frankel and others. And I'm going to mention one of his points in a little bit. But if you go looking for his article, just know that you're going to see that there. But he brings some examples of Tosefta that explains Mishnah, which I think really convey this very clearly. If you take a look at source number 2, this is the first Mishnah in Maseches Yuma. Shivas Yamim Kodem Yom HaKippur Mafrishin Kohen Gadol Mibeso Lelishkas Parhedrin. 7 days before Yom Kippur, they isolate the Kohen Gadol, they take him out of his house, and he goes to this room called Lishkas Parhedrin. The Gemara discusses why it's called Lishkas Parhedrin, not our discussion right now. Umaskin and lo Kohen Acher Tachtov Shema Yarabo Psul, and they appoint a deputy Kohen Gadol who will be his replacement in the event that something happens. That's the opening line of that Mishnah. You know this Mishnah probably. They talk about appointing another wife for him as a backup because he has to be married, and then how many wives are you going to appoint? What if this one dies? And whatever. But the Tosefta in source number 3, this is the beginning of the Tosefta. There is nothing before it in the Tosefta in Yuma. Lama mafrishin kohen gadol mibeis al lishkas parhedrin. Why do we separate the kohen gadol from his home to the lishkas parhedrin? Pirish Rabbi Yehuda ben Pisera. Remember that in Arabic, there is no letter P, right? So Bisera, Pisera is all the same thing. It's just a question of which consonants you use. Whenever I talk about that, I'm always remembering Arafat and his please. He used to say please because he couldn't say please. That's what always sticks in my head because they didn't have a letter P. So, but in any case, Rabbi Yehuda ben Pisera is Rabbi Yehuda ben Bisera. Shema timatze ishto safek nida v'yavo aleha nimtza tamei shivas yamim. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bisera says the reason why they would isolate him is because his wife might turn out to be a safek nida. She might be a nida. V'yavo aleha, and he will live with her. The Gemara clarifies on this that he's not saying that this would happen intentionally, but rather he lives with his wife, and then after that she turns out to be a potential nida, and now I don't know his status, and is he kosher as a Kohen Gadol for Yom Kippur, or is he tamei? And therefore they would say, you know what, just stay out of the house for 7 days, okay? Do us a favor.
Why does it say then he's tamei for 7 days?
Right, so there's a whole discussion about this, because we assume normally that a nida does not metame her husband for 7 days. It's 1 day at Ha'erev. So there's a whole discussion about this in the Gemara. That's part of the Gemara in Daf Vav in Yuma. I didn't want to get into the whole sugya. But the key point that you see here is the Tosefta assumes you know this Mishnah. Right? The Tosefta begins with, why do we isolate? It assumes you know the Mishnah, and it offers you an explanation for why we are doing it. Now, the Gemara in Yuma also goes into it, but gives me different explanations. The Gemara has a machlokas, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, about why we isolate the Kohen Gadol. One answer is that it's learned from the Miluim, which we just had in the Parsha, the isolation there for the 7 days of dedicating the Mishkan. Or, alternatively, because Moshe had to wait before going onto the cloud on Har Sinai, he had to wait for 6 days, and on the seventh day he goes into the cloud. So the whole discussion in the Gemara and Yuma does not bring this note. But the point is simply to say the Tosefta is clearly explaining the Mishnah. That's what it's doing. A second example, Mishnah in Kiddushin, towards the end of the first perek. Kol mitzvas haben al ha'av, anashim chayavin v'nashim peturos. I am translating this the way that it should be translated. You'll see what I mean about that in a minute. But he says, all mitzvos for a son that are incumbent upon the father is chayav. The mother is not obligated. So mitzvos involving, something involving the kids, the father is obligated. V'chol mitzvos ha'av al ha'ben, and all of the mitzvos for the sake of the father that are done by the son, echad anashim v'echad anashim chayev. The truth is, sons and daughters are both obligated. That's the Mishnah. And then the Mishnah goes on to a different rule about mitzvos aseh she'azman grama, time-bound mitzvos, or whatever. The Mishnah is done with this conversation. It doesn't tell us which mitzvos you're talking about. However, the Tosefta in source number 5, again, without saying anything beforehand about the rule, just simply says, Ezohi mitzvos haben al ha'av, what does that mean? Mitzvos that are what the kid does for the parent? Machil umashke malbish umachase, give him food, give him something to drink, give him, you made your father go out and get the food. That was your obligation. Malbish umachase, give him clothing, the motzi umachnis, take him in, take him out, marchitz is panav yad v'raglav, bathe his face, hands and feet. These are all what we call kibud avayim, right? That's what these are. And again, it's a Tosefta explaining a Mishnah, working with the assumption that you know the Mishnah, and we are just going to explain it. So these are crystal clear examples of that. The only note on this, and the reason I made my point about the translation, is if you're using the Hebrew and not the English, you'll note that it used a different framing. Meaning, in the Mishnah, the phrase mitzvahs haben al ha'av referred to mitzvahs that the father has upon himself to do for the son. The Tosefta used the phrase mitzvahs haben al ha'av to refer to what the son's mitzvahs are that he has to do for the father. It flipped it. The Tosefta is using the addition of the Mishnah that's found in the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi has it that way. And you can understand why it's confusing, because the phrase mitzvahs haben al ha'av, you could really read that two opposite ways. The mitzvahs for the son that the father does, or the mitzvos of the son to do for the father. You could legitimately translate it either way, and in fact, Mishnah in the Bavli and Mishnah in the Yerushalmi use them in opposite ways, and the Tosefta is using the Yerushalmi's version of the Mishnah. Why it's using the Yerushalmi is a fascinating question I did not look into.
Or is it really that the Yerushalmi is using the Tosefta's
way? Less likely, because Yerushalmi is earlier than the Talmud Bavli.
Right, but isn't the Tosefta cool?
Yeah, but I'm looking at the Yerushalmi as potentially closer to the source of the Mishnah, especially because the Mishnah was done in Eretz Yisrael.
Oh, because time doesn't always matter.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. I'm not at all expert in the question of authenticity of the Mishnah and the Yerushalmi versus the Bavli.
But it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Proximity is what they would
yeah.
grow
with. Right. Modern academics, just one second there. Modern academics do not like this idea because they find some Tosefta that they contend is not commenting on the Mishnah. Well, yes, but it exists. That's their argument. I read a paper by this fellow Benjamin Katzoff, who's a professor in Eretz Yisrael. I want to say Hebrew U, but I'm not sure that that's true. And I excerpted a piece from it in source number 6, without the context, though. He's talking about a Tosefta in Brachos, which seems to indicate that... that's interesting. Okay, he's talking about a Tosefta in Brachos that is Rabbi Yehuda walking behind Rabbi Akiva and another Tana in the Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah are discussing Tzarchei Tzibur, community needs. They're taking care of some communal matters, and they're not saying Shema, and it's in the early morning. And Rabbi Yehuda worries that they're missing the time for Shema, so he says Shema himself, and then the sun, and then they finally say Shema, but the sun is already over the horizon. And so the question is, what is this Tosefta doing? We do not have this story in the Gemara, we do not have this story in the Mishnah. This story is not one of the ones that you learn as a standard text. Is it trying to teach me something about the latest time for Shema? Is it trying to teach me something about what exempts you from saying Shema? Depending on where you are, what your context is in the Mishnah determines that. And he has a whole discussion about how to read that Tosefta. Is it disagreeing with the Mishnah? Is it commenting on the Mishnah? Is it an independent text? I brought you in source number 6, but we're not going to read it because we lost enough time thanks to the food snafu. So I'm not going to take you through it, but you can see it for yourself what he says. But essentially, he argues that there are texts of Tosefta that actually are independent, and that tends to be a view in modern scholarship.
How were the Tosefta retained as a body of work considered? It wasn't, at least in recent times, wasn't studied regularly.
Right.
How was it not lost?
So I think, well, first of all, once you get to printing press and people printing things, texts don't need to be studied in order for them to be retained. But prior to that, I think it was learned. Meaning, I think Tosefta was actually learned.
As its own.
Meaning, Rav Oshia canonized it. It has its own life, so to speak. And yes, I think it is learned. I mean, we find a lot of discussion about what the Rambam had access to in his Mishnah Torah and his use of Bavli and his use of Yerushalmi, and I believe he's drawing on Tosefta as well. You'd really need to take like a Kesef Mishnah and go through and see where does he tell you the Rambam's getting this from Tosefta particularly. But yeah, no, I believe it is learned. So the source number 7, which is our last source here, gives us more about the Brisos. For some reason, I did not print out my notes on this, but I think that this piece of Rav Shmuel Gaon's letter actually speaks for itself, and we'll be able to get it anyway. So here he's talking about Brisa, which again is Tanaitic. It's from Tanoim. It does not appear in the Mishnah. It does not appear in the Tosefta. The Gemara quotes it, usually because it disagrees with something that we've already learned. Sometimes it's a support for something we've already learned, Tanya de Masayalach. Sometimes it starts a discussion in the Gemara, Tanu Rabbanan, such and such. And sometimes the conclusion of a discussion in the Gemara is, yeah, this brisa is wrong. There's something wrong with this brisa. There's something wrong with the addition of it, how it was transmitted, whatever it is, and it's not authoritative. So the question is, how does that evolve? And that's what he's trying to answer here in source number 7. We're now not in Tosefta, but in Brisos. So he says, "V'karchazu rabbanon debraisa acharini delo havu merabbi chia v'rab oshia deizbu shabeshta." When the rabbis saw that there were other braisos, not the ones canonized by Rabbi Chia and Rabbi Oshia in the Tosefta, that had problems in their edition, he goes into a couple of examples of it that I skipped. Vahani braisa de tarzi Rabbi Chia Rabbi Oshia adifan midekulu. The ones that Rabbi Chia and Rabbi Oshia resolved, the ones that they arranged in the Tosefta, those were much better. V'lektinu rabbanon v'tananhi bei rabbanon. So the rabbis then collected these other brisos, and they learned them in the yeshiva. Ba'alei and amrinim b'gemara tanu rabbanon, and that's when the gemara says tanu rabbanon. That's exactly what it's referring to. It's referring to these brisos. These are brisos that are already somewhat problematic. They have some issues with their text. And then he says, "Ve'afa bichein habushchichi brisi acharoni." There were also other brisos found. "Ve'gaisi rabbanon lehu kol chad v'chad ma'ida agmeri rabbe." And each rav learned the brisos that his rebbe had taught him. The tanoi nami tani yashon kamehon, and the tanoim taught them to the students in front of them. Kigon achi tana debe rabbi chia, asion tana debe rabbi ami, ubar kapara nami tani mishnayos achere. Oh, sorry, it's before the bar kapara line. He says, these are taught by, and he names a couple of people who taught them. And then he says, bar kapara is very well known as a student of Rebbe. So bar kapara, he taught mishnayos acheros, other things identified as mishnayos. Ubekama duchti amrinon, and in various places we say kedeka amar Levi b'masnisin, as Levi said in a mishnah. Udu rabbi, even though it's not a mishnah like our mishnayos. Udu rabbi chiyo, udu rabbi oshia adifa midekulu. Rabbi chiyo and rabbi oshia's toseftos are better than all of these brisos. V'chol chad v'chad minhon, islahon brisa akol mesechta u'mesechta. Each of these tanoim had brisos for each mesechta. Kidei Amrinon, he quotes you the Gemara Bava Basra, Tani Rav Misharvia, which in our edition is actually Rav Hoshia, not Rav Misharvia. B'kiddushin debei Levi. Rav Misharvia learned in Meseches Kiddushin in the Yeshiva of Levi. V'hunami ha'yashame de Rebbe. He was also a servant of Rebbe. He is a student of Rebbe. Kibar kapara ukrab chia ukrab hoshia. Like bar kapara, like rabbi chia rab hoshia. So he also had specific lessons that he learned in particular Mesechtas. V'rabbonin de Bavel, davukame rabbeinu, havalahu masnaisa. The Tanoim in Bavel, before Rebbe, also had mishnayos of their own. Dehahavas behu Torah meruba shumar bitzim beduchta de mesivta. They had lots of Torah that they spread in the yeshiva. So it isn't as though Rebbe is the one who writes Mishnah and nobody else has anything. Even though Rav Shira Gaon has already said that the previous generations didn't record mishnayos, by Rebbe's time there are Tanoim who are writing things down, who are teaching it to their students, who are continuing to teach those, and those end up being brisos, because they didn't have Rebbe's authority to be able to do it. Not to mention, the ones he's mentioned that are in Bavel, they're in the wrong country. Disnan, Amar Rabbi Akiva, like he says, I'll give you an example. Rabbi Akiva said, Kishiradati Neherda la Aber Shana. He says, I went down to Neherda, right? Went down, he's from Eretz Yisrael. He went down to Bavel, to Neherda, to calculate adding an Adar. Pumbedisa Dahava Bay Rabbi Chanina ben Achi Rabbi Yoshua, and then you have Pumbedisa, which had the Tana Rabbi Chanina, the nephew of Rabbi Yoshua, the Tana Rabbanon b'Sanhedrin, and he says, look, we have a brisa in Maseches Sanhedrin which says Tzedek Tzedek Tirdof, justice justice you shall pursue, Halach Achar Beis Din Yafa, you're supposed to look for a good Beis Din, and who is that? Umefashinon Achar Rabbi Chanina ben Achi Rabbi Yoshua Lagola, the nephew of Rabbi Yoshua. Go to him in the diaspora. The point being simply that there were Tanoim who were known, who were teaching Torah outside of Eretz Yisrael, contemporary to Rebbe. So you have brisos that are actually Babylonian, as opposed to Rebbe, who's canonizing the Mishnah in Eretz Yisrael. Are we clear? Am I going too fast? All right. I just want to really wrap this up this week. Yeah. Sorry. Was it? No. I'm not.
So
I wasn't.
You implied that a brisa that starts with Tana Rabbanan may have problems. I was under the impression that brisos that start with Tana Rabbanan are very strong brisos.
Correct. They are stronger than other brisos, but they are not as strong as the Mishnah. That was his... He said, on the one hand, he said, Isbu Shabeshta, there are problems. On the other hand, he clearly delineated, and he's going to delineate further, between the Tanur Rabbanan ones and the other ones, before saying, Udechi Rabbi Chiya or Rabbi Hoshia Adifan Mikulhu. Whatever made it into Sefta, that's ironclad.
Right.
That's better. So it's you know, if you were to compare, there are various ones, it's Mishnah, Rav Chiya of Hoshia's Tosefta, Tanur Rabbanan Brisos, other Brisos. That's your hierarchy, although it's not a true hierarchy because Mishnah, we said, is really separate from all of these. That's Rebbe's work, and Tosefta may be commenting on his work.
But certainly in Brisos, in terms of their numbers,
yeah.
Tosefta, Tanur Rabbanan, and then Sanyo.
Correct. And that's where he's going now. He says in Mem Aleph 41. Ubiyome de Rebbe Ubasrei, in Rebbe's time and after him, Hanu Masnaisa de Bavloi, Havu Mikrian Mishnas Rabbi Nasan Beretz Yisrael. The Babylonians' Mishnayos were called by the Jews in Eretz Yisrael the Mishnah of Rabbi Nasan. That's what they called these brisos of the Babylonians. Umar Shmuel Nami Amrina Bekama Duchti Tana Deve Shmuel. We have Shmuel, who is an Amora, right, from that first generation. So he says in certain cases, or we learn his Torah, it was taught in the yeshiva of Shmuel. V'hanach mishnayos tahavu tani lehu tamidei chachamim harishonim lomis amra b'shem Rabbi Akiva. These mishnayos that were taught by the other Tanoim are not from the school of Rabbi Akiva. Damrina b'kamaduchti tana deve Rabbi Yishmael. We have this, we learned in the yeshiva of Rabbi Yishmael, or tana deve Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. V'havi anami brisa l'rishone rishonim, and they had brisos as well, these early ones, k'daminim be'erevin tani Rabba Bar Mari b'divei Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabba Bar Mari learned in the yeshiva of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was a Tana. So he says, those are brisos as well. They're not canonized. They're not Mishnah. They're not Mishnah of Rebbe, certainly. They're not these Mishnayos of the other Tanoim either. They're something else. The chulhu, this is the key line. V'chulu hani brisa lo kavine lemigra sinhu kulei alma kide akbu and brisa de rabchiyav rab oshia. These other brisos were not established to be learned like the Tosefta of Rabchiyav rab oshia. This was not, right, you go back to Yair's question about, you know, people learning Tosefta, he seems to think that they are. They are learning Tosefta. And that's very important in terms of answering the question, because that means Rav Shira Gaon, right, believes that this is a real limud. This is what they're learning in yeshiva, are the Tosefta. So certainly in his day, which we're talking about the 10th century, right? We said he was the beginning of the 10th century to the very beginning of the 11th century. So in his day, they certainly consider the Tosefta something to be learned. Velo amrina minayhu tanu rabbana. Sorry, the... right, so these other brisos, which are not those, which are not... Yeah, those authoritative ones. V'lam rina minayu tanu rabbanan, and we don't say about these other brisos tanu rabbanan either. Ela tanya, the tana tuna. He used the two of the popular phrases. Either tanya, which just means it was taught, or tana tuna, which means it was taught further. It was taught further. That's why Rashi translates tana tuna.
This is another type of tuna.
Yeah, not the one you brought. That's a mandatory joke. Okay, fine. But he says that's where you get these other brisos coming into play, which do not carry the same authority as Tanur Rabbanan brisos, and certainly don't carry the authority of Tosefta's. And some of them are outside of the line of Rabbi Akiva's Misora. Right? Rebbe is taking Rabbi Meir, who's taking Rabbi Akiva, but these are actually other strands, which, you know, may contribute to the fact that they end up being on the outside.
Tosefta is quoted in the Gemara, correct?
Yes.
How is it titled? It's not Tosefta.
No, so I think we actually do end up using Tanur Rabbanan when we quote a Tosefta often, or Tani Rabbi Chiya you'll get, or something like that, because it's Rabbi Chiya Rabbi Oshia.
Is my sense correct that at the end of the day our headers are all Mishnayot, but the body of the Gemara is mostly based on the Brisos at the end of the day, so it sort of undermines the authority of the Mishnah?
Well, it speaks to the idea that the Bryce is explaining the Mishnah. You know, that this was initially how one would have learned Mishnah. So it ends up being a major... I don't know about saying it's the majority of. I'm not...
Not most of this.
Citations tend to be yes.
But it's even when it's against even when it's against the Mishnah, it's bringing in another Tana's opinion many times to show that how one opinion was this way and one opinion was the other.
Yeah.
Way, explaining how what I'm really talking about.
Right. No, but Yair's point, if I understand you correctly, is it's not that you open up a Gemara and you find Rabbi this saying X about the Mishnah, Rabbi that saying Y about the Mishnah, and having, you know, or well, citing other Mishnayos you do find. It's true you find more citations of Brisos. Just, I've never looked at it this way, but from the volume perspective, I think there just physically may be more Brisos than there are Mishnayos, certainly on the Masechtos that end up being discussed in Bavli. It'll be an interesting question. You know, what's the number? What's the size of the text?
And it's rare to find a section of Gemara off of the Mishnah that doesn't at least quote Brisos.
Well, that's Yair's point. I'm just, but I hear it. I'm just,
what
I'm not sure.
What does it say to the authority of the Mishnah in a sense?
Well, it says that the Mishnah is taken as the given, and it's the landscape on which we're operating. But the Mishnah is you know canonized in such a way that you've got your category here and you've got your category here. I'm not going to need to quote other Mishnayos as much, you know, to counter this. Like when you look at the classic sort of how can you say X? There's also Y, like Tosfos, you know, doing that. It's generally not. How can you say this Mishnah in Bikurim? I've got a Mishnah in Kiddushin that says something that's the opposite. That's not the norm. It's usually Gemara versus Gemara or Brisa like that. So it could be you're not quoting other Mishnayos to challenge or to deepen because that isn't really the way it works. That's not the way Mishnah works.
Because you're assuming they're in coordination.
Yeah. So that could be why. All right. So God willing, next week we're going to move on to Rav Hai Gaon. Technically, we should do Rav Shmuel Bar Chofni next because he's in between, overlapping with them. But Rav Hai is the son of Rav Shrira. And so I want to go straight into Rav Hai, who is in many ways an extension of Rav Shrira. And then we'll come back to Rav Shmuel Bar Chofni after that. Rav Hai, you have to know. Rav Hai is the greatest impact that can safely be said of the Gaonim in various areas of halacha, even more than Rav Saja. And then we'll go on to you know, what happens after the period of the Gaonim. Maybe we'll talk about Shmuel Ben Ali a little bit. We'll see. But that'll be starting.
The Gaonim, do we get into the Rashis?